Chapter 66. Meeting the Relatives. I returned to London after visiting my parents' hometown, where they'd lived with their families before they met, married and immigrated to Australia. A day trip to Watford had been an unexpectedly moving experience, and I now understood something of my parents, and their parents' lives, in this part of the world, before I was born. With yet another bucket list tick, I had a couple more days in London before heading northwest to explore the Outer Hebrides, after which I planned to return to Cluny Hill College, to continue the Findhorn Foundation membership process. I'd already given London a pretty good shake, knowing full well that I may never again have the time nor the money to do more touristy stuff with the same intensity. As it was, I dashed here and there to see West End plays, concerts, art shows, textile exhibitions, art galleries, museums, St. Paul's Cathedral and St. Mary Le Bow Church, Harrods, Fortnum and Mason, Marks and Spencer's, the London Stock Exchange, Apel and Van Cleef. With a couple of exceptions, my bucket list was covered. On my second last day, as a special treat, I took myself off to the Tower of London to see the Beefeaters, the Ravens, and the priceless crown jewels. We stood waiting patiently in line, something I'd learned to do since arriving in the UK, and ever so slowly, snaked our way down into the bowels of the tower to see the royal booty. And what an amazing sight it was, with umpteen pieces, all beautifully displayed behind bulletproof glass. Our visit was unexpectedly eventful because one of the security guards inadvertently set off the alarms by touching the glass, whilst answering one of my numerous questions. What happened next was like a scene from a James Bond movie. Sheets of grey steel silently slid down in front of the glass, leaving us in subdued light, wondering what on earth was happening. There was no panic. We were instructed to stay put until the all clear sounded some 10 minutes later, after which we watched spellbound as the protective steel sheets rose up into the ceiling, allowing us one last look at the astounding collection of crowns, tiaras and jewellery, before we were escorted from the basement, somewhat bemused by the experience. As my last day in London dawned, I was aware of the niggling sense of familial obligation I'd carried with me from Australia. I felt obliged to find out more about my mother's family. For as long as I can remember, given the opportunity, my mother would regale us with stories about her father's famous relatives. The same sketchy stories were told over and over about the descendants of silversmith, Peter George Wyon, who came to England from Germany with King George I, in 1714. After which Peter and his descendants went on to design medals, coins and seals for the British Empire for generations. I was always a little ho-hum about my mother's famous family's stories, but as I'd only ever lived at the bottom of the world, I was in no position to question her claims. But now I was in London, it was different. My last day was a Thursday, so I decided to take the bull by the horns and begin a less than enthusiastic last-minute search for additional information about the Wyon family. I caught a mid-morning bus from Hackney to the city. Once on the bus, I had a decision to make. Where to sit? Downstairs in the claustrophobic, smoke-free area, or upstairs with the smokers and the view? On a coin toss, I opted to sit upstairs, where from the upper deck windows I could see buildings outlined against the grey sky, people moving along the streets and gridlocked traffic, as we slowly stopped-started our way into the city. I slid into an empty seat. Once settled, I took note of my surroundings and was astounded to recognize a Toowoomba couple sitting in front of me. What were the odds? We'd worked together at the Institute, before I left for the United Kingdom. Incredulous, we gawked at each other, speechless. After recovering from the shock, we caught up before I got off the bus to begin my Wyon quest. I began at the London Museum and from there was directed to the British Museum. By luck, rather than good management, I arrived to discover that all museum departments, including the coin and medal department, were open to the public on Thursday afternoons, between 2 and 4:30. At the counter, I gingerly explained my quest after which, to my utter amazement, the Wyon expert, T.H.E.
W-Y-O-N-E-X-P-E-R-T was summoned, and before long, the charming Mr. Jones appeared. I explained who I was, where I was from, and how I'd like to know more about my ancestors' work. Mr. Jones was effusive. I followed him through a rabbit warren of narrow passages to a windowless room, where a security guard was seated. The walls of the room were lined with banks of 1 meter high polished wooden cabinets containing narrow drawers, each drawer with two tiny brass pulls. With a flourish, Mr. Jones proceeded to pull out drawer after drawer after drawer, to reveal hundreds of coins, medals and dies, all part of the British Museum's huge collection of the Wyon family's output. Before long I became mesmerized, no longer able to take in the beauty of their work. Completely overwhelmed, I asked Mr. Jones if there was a publication with examples of the Wyons' work. He promptly produced a thick tome, which contained page after page of images and descriptions, for hundreds of coins and medals. I couldn't believe my eyes. So, my mother's oft-told stories about her famous family were true. As I recalibrated my brain, I realized that there was no way I could take in this tsunami of numismatic information, and that it was unlikely I'd ever visit again. As I considered my dilemma, I had a brainwave. I asked Mr. Jones if it would be possible to photocopy the Wyon book, and to my amazement, he agreed. Whilst he went off to make copies, I sat surrounded by my creative inheritance. The realization was overwhelming. As I waited, I began to fret about the cost of photocopying, wondering if I could afford it. When Mr. Jones reappeared with the photocopied pages, I felt obliged to ask him how much I owed. He waved my question aside, saying, "With the compliments of the British Museum." It was my lucky day. I was both chuffed and flabbergasted to receive the red carpet treatment, thanks to my inherited DNA. At closing time that afternoon, I recall Mr. Jones walked me to the museum's front door. I thanked him wholeheartedly, before floating down the imposing stone steps on a cloud of both pride and disbelief. Mr. Jones confirmed that my mother's bragging was not a furphy after all, and I sensed it'd take me a while to integrate the revelations that came from our meeting. That evening, I carefully stowed my Wyon photocopies in my backpack, before taking the bus to Oban, on the west coast of Scotland, to begin a Cook's tour of the Outer Hebrides, after which I planned to return to the Foundation. The bus ride gave me plenty of time to reflect upon my visit to the British Museum. Thanks to Mr. Jones, I now had a deeper understanding of the considerable numismatic contribution made by the Wyons, my very own ancestors. On reflection. The British Museum. Sadly, I no longer have the photocopies that Mr. Jones kindly provided. Somewhere along the way they got lost, as is often the case when moving from one side of the planet to the other, as I did for many years. I was, and remain extremely grateful to Mr. Jones for confirming my creative inheritance. As a result, I now welcome the thought that my forebears may have bestowed upon me an innate creative legacy, one that I've utilized throughout my art-making career. My area of expertise is textiles, not numismatic design, but irrespective of the artistic discipline, good design, particularly composition, is paramount. In retrospect, I realize my early years were spent accumulating the skills and experience necessary to embark on a ridiculously daring project, that of designing, producing, promoting, marketing and touring textile artwork, describing who we are as Australians. 10 exhibitions in all, that have visited 60 Australian gallery and museum venues to date. The exhibitions are described in detail in later chapters. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I have subsequently produced an artist's book, titled My Family, that includes a full family tree. I was delighted to discover I am an 8th-generation descendant of the original Peter George Wyon. The tree shows that each generation since has produced at least one medalist or engraver or sculptor or artist, skills passed from father to son, but in my case, from mother to daughter. For me, it's humbling to belong to this talented family.
Facts.
The Wyan Dynasty. Recently retired keeper of the British Museum's Department of Coins and Medals, Philip Atwood, describes the Wyan family's numismatic contribution thus. The Wyan family dominated the design and production of medals, coins and seals in 19th century Britain. Renowned around the world for their engraving skill, their commissions included official government works as well as many private medals for institutions and individuals. Together, these works document a broad spectrum of life in Victorian England. Over the course of the 19th century, three members of the family became chief engraver at the Royal Mint.